This is The Financial Coconut, Singapore's first personal finance podcast network. And I'm Timothy Mazier, editor-in-chief of Blockhead. Join me and the crew on our weekly Friday segment as we filter out the noise in the crypto space and keep you updated on the ideas that actually matter. This is Blockcast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, welcome back to Blockcast. I'm your host, Reggie, aka your chief financial coconut.
And I'm Mark, the founder and CEO of Blockhead.
This is Tim, managing editor at Blockhead.
Tim, don't paisay. I mean, it's like the 10th one already. Openly, guys, I'm managing editor of Blockhead, okay? But yeah,
man, it's a big deal, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Wait, Mark, that one I can say, you cannot say. it's like you're fanning your own team, you know?
I don't know if you know this, but, you know, Tim is kind of a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Tell us, Tim. I know previously you worked in another place. Like, that's much bigger.
I mean, it was in a different space. It was Fin News.
What about Fin News? Why you give up covering Fin News? What were you covering? I mean, I know your backstory. I thought it was quite cool.
Yeah, but just got a bit bored, I guess. And then Mark's an old friend. So.
Well, look, put it this way, man. You know, he spent some time in Moscow. And then I think he traveled, you know, Central Asia. And then, you know, apparently he went to Syria for a while. And then, like, the word around is that, you know, he's probably a spy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, exactly. That's why he has
Russian,
such strong...
Chinese, you know, in English.
Tim, you speak Chinese too?
Yeah, I had to, right? I went to school here.
Oh, shit. Okay. Yeah. Wow, I feel like that's a social topic to be uncovered another time.
Definitely a spy,
yes,
guys.
Yeah. Definitely a spy. Guy was in Moscow, so that is damn cool. Yeah, so actually, why you give up? Why you give up mainstream finance or like TradFi and join this space?
I mean, like I said, I've known Mark for a while and always wanted to do something together. So, you know, got bored during the pandemic. Thought it was the right time. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, back then, you know, it was a bull market for crypto as well. On hindsight, maybe some regrets,
we're
in it already.
Nice. Okay, we'll continue to discover personalities on set as you go along. As you join us every week, we'll review a little bit about our history. Okay, so yeah, we have a lot of stories today. And I think some of the biggest stories are in the space of macro. So I'm going to bring you through the very first story. And the first story is Fed announces a reduction in terms of their interest rate rise. Okay, so not that they reduce their interest rates, but they're going to slow down their increase. Okay, so in other words, they have announced interest rates will be increased by 0.25%, which, you know, all the analysts like to say 25 basis points, okay? Which I get it, because 0.25% or 5% is not technically 5.25%, okay? But anyway, okay, that's just being dumb. So in other words, it's going to go from 4.5% to 4.75%, okay? So it is what it is. There's a slowdown in this increase, and Powell, which is the Fed chairman, has come up to say that, okay, it looks like inflation has been a little bit more control, you know, goods sector is not as wild, and but it has still a long way to go. So I don't really know what does a long way to go mean. And I know a lot of market watchers will always look into all these fine lines, you know, what is a long way to go, blah, 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 right? But the base idea, okay, all the narrative aside, the base idea here is they slow down their increase. And when there's a slowdown increase, there tend to be a little bit more market movement. A lot of market participants will be a bit more excited, right? Because in other words, your cost of credit is no longer growing as fast. So usually you see money flowing back into some of the high growth sectors or more speculative sectors. And I will comfortably say Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies are in this space, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think maybe we should also kind of like, you know, consider what is like the Fed's inflation target, right? Personally, for me, I feel like this conversation really is all about instilling confidence in the Fed, right? Whether the market believes and that, you know, like believes that the Fed has enough credibility to actually pull this off. And I feel that like maintaining a 2% inflation target it's frankly unrealistic.
Mm.
You know, in my opinion, as in, obviously it's nice to have that, you know, but I think that they can manage the narrative and the conversation a bit better if like, okay, look, we shoot for Mars and we land on the moon, that's fine, right? So if we get inflation down to say about 4-ish%, you know, I think that that feels a bit more realistic, or like, you know, like where I think, you know, we can see a bit more stability in the front, right? But I mean, like, they've gone on to say like, you know, like we are going to get it back to 2%, and then that is one thing. And then that creates a lot of questions, right? Because, you know, like now they're slowing it down, and then hence the question of like, how long is it actually going to take before they reach their target? Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like you're going to bid for the GB's contract for MAS. You know? It's like, there's a GB's contract for MAS social media management.
Seriously, like, I mean, going out. And it's me, like, you know, like, look, like, just playing armchair economist here, right? I mean, I sit on my freaking chair, and then I hear, like, you know, things like, you know, like, I watch CNBC and I see this freaking Jerome Powell come out still talking about his freaking 2% kind of target, right? I'm like, sure or not? You know, I mean, you're bringing it down from like 9% all-time high back to 2%, you know? I just don't think that is possible without them actually kind of like, you know, pivoting and then doing an about face and then like, you know, kind of like reintroducing a new target sometime down the road, in my opinion.
Yeah. But that being said, right, that is a different topic in itself, right? Yeah. For I think the discussion here today is like, is this change in stance, okay? Which means they are slowly tapering their interest rate hike. How is it affecting the crypto market, right? And you're seeing money come back into these spaces, right? And it's not just the crypto space. You see entering back into tech space also, right? So a lot of your quote-unquote speculative tech stock or your fast growth stocks, they have also risen, you know, over these past few months. And I mean, this is a phenomenon. I don't really have a great explanation for this phenomenon because, you know, for me, right, I'm very hard on like, okay, something can be correlated. Doesn't mean it's a causality involved, right? So I don't want to go too far to say that, oh, you know, interest rates slow down. That means these kind of things come back up. But you observe this, right? You see a little bit of that and more money is coming in. I think the real question is it going to continue to stay that way? You know, or is Bitcoin prices going to hold? Are crypto prices going to hold? Or, you know, it's just one of that narrative.
I think since, you know, the Fed's announcement, like Bitcoin hit like over 24,000. So it's like over like 5% up. And, you know, understandably, there's been a lot of interest in, you know, Bitcoin related analysis. On Blockhead. Those articles have been getting the most traction, you know, in the past week or two. But I think we also published a piece this week about how Bitcoin looks to be headed down, actually, just based on technical analysis.
Tell us, why does Bitcoin look like it's heading down?
I mean, okay, well, the our
editor-in-chief speaks, yes.
No. It wasn't written by me, but our resident blocksmith, as we call him, he's our technical analyst. And, you know, he looks at cycles and charts. But basically, Bitcoin has peaked in its 80-day cycle. So the trough is due this week, and the price will have to fall hard to meet it on time.
Okay, so it's a TA kind of thing, yeah? We're not talking about fundamentals, okay. But you need a better name, blocksmith. I'm going to meet the blocksmith when I come into the studio. But yes, I will ask the person to request for a better name. But yes, please continue.
So, no, I mean, I think his target is 21,800. So there's quite a big sell-off.
What is his credibility, actually? Has he hit his predictions all the time?
So this guy, he sells plugins for the Bloomberg terminal, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, okay, look, I think the easy way to say this is that, like, okay, so he has a quantitative background, right? But he's developed a proprietary software that is currently one of, like, I would say, like, you know, like, the subscription services on offer at Bloomberg. That is the easy way to say this. He has kindly, you know, agreed to help us with some technical analysis. And, you know, as we all know, there's a lot of that around, right? So like, what we try to do at Blockhead really is to pair that with commentary as well so that it is not taken in isolation.
Okay. But do you know the success rate? Can I press you a little bit on the success rate?
Okay, so I think that if you ask me whether whether I have traded on his charts, the answer is no. And that's not because like it's not accurate. It's just that the way that we produce technical analysis on Blockhead, it usually is a bit more forward looking and we don't do it like, you know, day by day. You know, so it's not really meant for like kind of like, you know, swing trading. Like it's really like, you know, like to pair up with our, I would say, macro commentary and analysis. Yeah.
Interesting.
So okay. that's as much as I would say, like, you know, like, or rather like what the utility of these things are for content that we produce on Blockhead. Yeah.
Okay.
And also a lot of his so-called mistakes have been because of market events and not, which were beyond the realm of predictability that you can get on a technical chart. You know, all these crashes that were related to exchange collapses and things like that, you know, they came out of the blue.
But I would say that in totality, like most of the commentaries that we put out under his column have been fairly accurate. Whether people are trading on them or like making investments based on what we produce there, I mean, like, I think that's something that we have to do some research. Because that is also not really the intent of that particular column. It is not a swing trading or a day trading product. Yeah.
Mm-mm. Okay, cool, interesting. So the house view is prices will come down.
I think this is the last run of greed in this market before we see a bottom.
Really? Okay.
If you're the Fed, there is nothing... If things are looking good, labor market's still strong for now, then there's no need to take any drastic action while you can slow down, But I mean, if you look at the broader... you see what all these tech companies are doing, right? Like Disney just acts like I think 10,000 jobs or something like that. There will come a point in time, in my opinion, where they would actually have to kind of be more aggressive to kind of bring down inflation levels. I think that that's unavoidable, right? Whether they want to really bring it down to 2% or reach some sort of medium. I mean, I think that really is the question here. So I think that there is still going to be a bottom and it's not here yet.
Okay. I actually have a different view of that. Okay, but it's a different show. In a sense that I believe that deflationary cycles are the ones causing a lot of these kind of job losses. But that's a different discussion altogether. Nice. Okay, so check out Blockhead. I think they have a house view. Very interesting. And it's going to come down. So prediction. Okay, don't mark us on our prediction. But,
the column itself is an interesting read because he also looks the dollar index, gold and euro dollar on a weekly basis.
Nice. Oh my God, I so long never hear euro dollar already. But good.
Yeah, nice. I mean, I guess one caveat I have to make here when looking at these, technical indicators, right? I mean, I'm sure the audience also, I mean, they would know this, but it's worth repeating, right? It is one aspect of a multivariate way you should kind of analyze the market or stocks or Bitcoin or whatever. Yeah, it shouldn't be seen in isolation.
Yes,
in my opinion.
Yes. I get it, right? And it's much more complicated depending on your investment style, what factors you take, right? But on this story itself, I think my base case is don't blindly follow the Fed and the media narrative that's being peddled, right? Know what's your investment strategy, know what you're trying to do, and then you can ride along. And if this so happens to be part of your investment strategy, okay, go for it. As long as you have hit rate, I think that's the idea. Okay, so that is story number one.
Yeah, and then story number two, very related to this, right? As you can see, Fed being less aggressive with their interest rate announcements, and we see the stocks pumping as well.
Yes.
Stock in question right now is Coinbase, and it has rallied 179% since touching a low of $31 on January 6th.
Wow.
Right.
So the pump happened for two reasons, right? The Fed, dovish Fed speak, and positive legal news on the Coinbase front. So I guess for the benefit of listeners, it had to do with dismissal of a class action lawsuit brought against, the exchange and Brian Armstrong, CEO. The lawsuit alleged that Coinbase offered unregistered securities without registration as a securities exchange, or broker-dealer. Basically, the plaintiffs argued that tokens listed by Coinbase are securities and a trade occurred between a consumer and the exchange as opposed to, peer-to-peer decentralized exchange. But the court decision upheld the Coinbase user agreement.
I think very importantly, when they dismissed the lawsuit, right, they didn't address the question of whether the issues of tokens was securities or not. And frankly, I don't think it's within the purview of the court to do that. That is a matter of policy, something that Congress, Senate needs to kind of sort out.
Interesting. Okay. So I think I come from a view that, this rally, right? I mean, what Tim said, his view is that two reasons, right? Fed said something and positive news from the legal front. And I do agree that the legal front side of things is very common in a sense of every time a certain company, they have been abdicated from whatever legal or major legal pursuits on them, things do come back, right? Because it's expensive, right? And to be clear, even a lot of big companies, once they are done with the lawsuit, right, even if they get fined, there's somehow still a rally, right? Because there is a definitive kind of end to it already, right?
Yeah.
It's no longer something like an overhang on them, right? So this is quite well kind of like a pattern over time that people see, But yeah, I think at the core, what are you trying to play, right? If you're looking at Coinbase as a kind of longer term strategy, you want to buy Coinbase as a company to hold, then is a centralized exchange strategy going to stay? Or if all the users in the market is going to move to some sort of a decentralized exchange, then Coinbase essentially fade out of existence, right? And most exchanges margin will shrink over time. Usually that's a baseline for exchange. It's a given. And yeah. You see consolidation and the margin shrink as more and more other reliable providers come in. It's a very exchange kind of game, right? So that's that. It's the fundamental of the business. Is it that strong? I don't know, right? But I do know that a lot of people, they do buy Coinbase as a quote-unquote safer bet lah, as compared to straight into crypto.
So how, Reggie, buy or not?
I won't.
Okay, well, yeah. Okay. I mean, yeah. I don't like exchanges as a business model, you know? And like, I mean, I guess the thesis here is that if you're looking to get the upside from investing in something like Bitcoin, just buy Bitcoin.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you would do that because, you know, like you're looking at the growth, right? And then, but if you invest in an exchange, then, you know, it just doesn't make sense from it. The thesis then becomes very inconsistent. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it goes without saying that a crypto bull market will do favors for Coinbase. And it just seems like, you know, the exchange's stock price largely moves in tandem with the price of Bitcoin.
That means the fundamentals of the business don't matter, right? In that sense.
I mean, that's what it seems like.
Okay, I would say that there was one thing that would impact my view on centralized exchanges, you know, from an investment point of view, right? And I think that comes with some finality over whether tokens are a security or not. Mm. Yeah, I think that once we have some clarity on that, right, it paves the way for more like, I would say, institutional money to kind of flow into this space, in my opinion.
So how does it then differ in that sense that it is defined as a security versus if it's defined as a token? How is it going to affect institutional?
Because you see, if you issue a token, it's supposed to be a utility token, right? You don't need, in terms of regulations, I'm just going to give a very basic explanation of this. You don't really need to kind of separate the funds injected for the tokens versus, you know, like the general balance sheet. You don't have to do that. But with, like, you know, securities, it's a different matter altogether. So if you buy a security, that needs to be kept in a separate bank account. Just more consumer protection.
No, but your narrative is that you think If there's clarity on this, then institutional funds will come in. But I don't know why is that the case.
Well, I think that, you know, like at the end of the day, right, it's just a more conservative look. Like if you have more protection on that front, then your more traditional financial institutions would, I guess, have a clearer mandate to kind of be investing in these alternative assets.
Mm-hmm. Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let me provide you a different viewpoint on this, okay? I provide all you listeners a different viewpoint, right? I think I sat on this idea for a while. It's like, okay, institutional investors come in, then this thing is going to grow, blah, 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 right? I sat on this idea for a while. And I thought about it, right? As more and more structures are at play and more of these kind of systems are at play, in other words, tax structures also come in, you know, legality, you know, it all dampens margin or it dampens profitability in terms of how much returns you can get, how much ROI you can get from this space as it becomes increasingly stable, right? And if it becomes increasingly stable, then my question to all the people that are thinking of crypto is that why do I need to invest in crypto for 15%, you know? Because the risk reward profile no longer becomes exciting. I could already do that in a much more established space, you know, in the stock exchange.
Oh, that's a fair point, Reggie.
Yeah, so at some point, the institutional investors, you must think of how insti think of things, okay? When institutional think of things, they always go for things that have consistent track record and high liquidity is the best, right? Which is why a lot of them end up in the stock market, in the bond market. I think a lot of people didn't know that properties actually in the credit rating structure are credit as like C or something, right? In other words, right, they are not liquid. Property is not liquid. So you actually, you know, if you take a pool of stocks, okay, $1 million worth of stocks and $1 million property, you go to the bank, right, depending on who you talk to, you may actually get better interest rates on the stocks because they are liquid as compared to you put the property that is illiquid, you know. So property actually is an inferior product, you know, relative to the stocks from an institutional investor point of view, right? And when they dabble in alternative investments like wine lah, watches lah, NFTs, you know, crypto, they are all aiming for that 20-30%, you know, that upside that is like going to be a big swing, like the cherry on the cake kind of thing, you know. And when crypto eventually, from this narrative, eventually get to a position where it's more stable, more regulated, give you 15%, then why am I here? Why should institutional investors be here? Right. So that is something that I think people need to think a little bit about, just throwing a different narrative out there for all you, lah, for all us.
Is it akin to central banks buying gold then?
Yeah, I mean, okay, we must be clear that central banks, when they buy gold, their goal is their goal is a different goal, right?
So one thing I should definitely have to add to this here, right, is that like we are talking about the regulatory classification of tokens that the court didn't make a decision on, right? This is a different conversation when we're talking about Bitcoin. Bitcoin is not a token. Okay. So like that is one caveat here.
Wait, can you give me some color? Why is Bitcoin not a token in the eyes of the courts?
Okay, so let me kind of, I guess the easy way to kind of explain this, right, is that Bitcoin is a coin that has its own blockchain, right? So the transaction fees in the network are paid in Bitcoins. And then, they're essentially used to incentivize, validators of the network. When an exchange, let's just say, issues a token, right? I mean, that's always kind of like built, issued on a, on a specific chain, right? And that often has a specific utility tied to it as well. So this particular token, it offers token holders certain rights in the ecosystem, blah, 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 blah. So like it's two different categories of, I would say, digital assets in this sense. I don't know whether that makes it clear enough, right? So generally speaking, when people talk about tokens, right, they're referring to any cryptocurrency besides Bitcoin and Ethereum. Even though, I mean, you can technically say that these things are tokens as well, but when we talk about cryptocurrencies as a class, right, that usually kind of like refers to Bitcoin and Ethereum. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, interesting to know. I mean, I'm also very new to this thing, right? So sometimes, I get there, everybody's trying to draw the circle, define things, as things develop. So, okay, interesting. Interesting thing to note. But yeah, I think all that being said.
I think just to just keep it very simple, right? And I think this is more culture and the way things are being mentioned in the media when we talk about tokens, right? People are not usually referring to Bitcoin and Ethereum. Okay, so when that is mentioned, it usually refers to a specific token that is built, that is layered on top of another blockchain.
Okay.
That is the easiest way to kind of
crypto culture,
look at it.
Yeah. Crypto culture. Yeah. Right, but for clarity's sake, Tim, don't laugh, because I'm shitting on it. Okay,
yeah, but technically, and I don't want to, again, it's very confusing, but technically very you can say that Bitcoin and Ethereum are tokens, it's just that no one describes them as
confused.
Tokens. No one describes them as tokens. Okay,
are they securities? Are they securities?
They're not securities either.
So they are sacred. Yeah. They are sacred.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe a closer reference here is like for Bitcoin at least is like commodity. I think that could be a way to look at it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Fair.
Getting regulatory clarity amongst all of these things, I think is going to be the next step. Like hopefully we have some clarity on it in the coming months or years.
Yeah. But back on Coinbase as the story, right? I think the idea here is if you are investing in Coinbase as a company, you do have to look at the fundamentals of the company, right? As much as there's more money slushing around in the crypto space, it benefits everyone in the space. I mean, when there's more money slushing around, it tends to benefit more people in the space. But is this company able to grab that slush? Right. And I think that's the real discussion.
We still didn't talk about the troubles that Coinbase are facing right now. Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. They closed in Japan, in January. They cut 20% of employees in the same month, which is like almost 1,000. They had to pay $100 million settlement with the New York's Department of Financial Services over their failure to maintain a compliance program. And the Q3 revenue also came in below analyst estimates by close to 100 million. So yeah, Bitcoin's price, is rallying, but and the Coinbase stock price as well. But looking at the company itself, you might see a different picture.
There
is also other multiple class action lawsuits that it's facing in various jurisdictions.
Okay, my verdict, just don't. there are other things.
Yeah.
in this market today, there are many other things that you will love yourself for buying, not this thing. Okay. But it's up to you. Please tell us if you really think, you know, Coinbase is the thing. I think we've said it already, right? One of my guys are on it, right? So hopefully this episode goes out on Reddit, and then you can come to our Reddit and then tell us why Coinbase is the thing, right? But you know, you hear it here, Reggie say, no need Coinbase. There are many other things to buy at this point in time that can probably give you very good or decent returns in the stock market. Lah, huh? And if you want to do the crypto thing, like what Mark say, just do crypto. Lah. Don't buy this like pseudo weird thing, you know, called Coinbase. What if we say all this, then they don't want to sponsor us anymore? Okay, but anyway. Anyway, we officially lost a potential sponsor called Coinbase.
Last night, you know, Coinbase CEO Brian Armstrong, he tweeted a rumor that's been, you know, picking up a lot of discussion online that, you know, the US SEC is going to ban retail investors from engaging in crypto staking. You know, this is one of the main income generating, you know, methods, you know, for people with exposure in the crypto space. According to him, he says that it would be a terrible path for the US if that were to happen. You know, what do you think?
It's a great path for the US. It's just not a great path for the crypto space.
Yeah.
Let's be clear, yeah. The US system is fundamentally running counter incentives to the crypto system. Okay. They have very different incentive structures, and the US dollar system will not want to see the crypto system rise way beyond where it is today. I mean, that's my worldview, lah. Okay, it's a great news for the USD space. You know, everybody, the Euro dollar system, you know, it's great for them. But like you said, lah, it will affect the crypto space, lah. But I don't know, you know, I try not to follow rumors too much, lah. But I understand.
Yeah, I mean, it's still a rumor, but, you know, yeah, someone of his stature, like, tweeting out rumors is also a bit odd.
Sometimes people of that stature, they tweet out rumor. It's not a rumor. They just mask it as a rumor, right? So that they don't need to, like, bear any responsibility if something happens. Hey, I heard. Actually, they really heard, you know? Yeah. they know it's coming, you know, but they cannot openly say, oh, someone told me, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like, hey, rumor has it, you know? Ooh, you know, like whatever. So I get it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's just an early warning, I guess. Yeah. Because according to a Coinbase report, in the fourth quarter of 2022, there were $42 billion of assets that are being staked right now, with annualized staking rewards of about $3 billion. So, you know, it is a big chunk and a big reason why many people hold, you know, large amounts of crypto as well.
Nice. Okay. So I think that's the... That one is a great stitch, lah. We can stitch it in already. Okay. Shall we continue? Story three? Okay, story three.
So for the third story this week, I thought we could discuss luxury brand involvement in NFTs. You know, why do luxury brands want to be associated with this space? So I bring up this story, this topic, because in the past week, we have seen, you know, luxury brands battling with the NFT world. First was Porsche. You know, they were forced to release a statement to clarify that their NFT project was halted because of a lot of phishing sites that, you know, trying to emulate the Porsche NFT drop. LV, Louis Vuitton, also had to deny its NFT plans after, you know, it was published by, you know, a bunch of leading crypto news outlets. So the LV thing was, you know, news of a partnership with Japanese artist Yayoi Kusama to launch a series of NFTs in commemoration of its 200th anniversary. By the way, these NFTs, according to those reports, which have since been denied, would cost about 4 ETH each. And there were going to be 10,000 NFTs. Okay, so... You know, do the calculations hell? Yourself on how much it would potentially bring the, you know, the brand. But, you know, okay, you know, LV has since come out to deny that they were not going to be launching any NFT collection within the context of its collaboration with Yayoi Kusama. But yeah, you know, why do luxury brands want to be associated with NFTs? I mean, do you think it dilutes their brand equity or?
Yeah, I mean, you really pointed it out, right? Like 10,000. You know, NFTs, 4 ETH each. And then, you know, yeah, I mean, what else to make money?
I mean, just buy the handbag, right, at that price. I mean, I don't know.
Let me put it to you, okay? Handbag, they cannot anyhow sell, right? Because handbag, right, if they flood the market with a lot of it, right, it dilutes the original thing, you know? Actually, they got a lot in the store, lah, but they always say, yeah, like, oh, you need to wait and reserve. Actually, in the fucking back room, right, they got a lot there. I'm dead sure, right? So handbag, all that, it's like their core product, right? And they cannot really just increase supply, you know? They want to remain this whole exclusive thing. You see, this whole LVMH guys, they are not idiots, right? So they have moved into like creating experiences with the museum, you know, with this, with that, trying to sell the brand in like lighter area fashion that, yeah, it's just, you buy it, then it disappears. You know, like when you sell an experience, it's an unlimited kind of pursuit, right? Whereas compared to when you sell a physical product, right? So I would not put it beyond them to say that they already make so much money, man. Why do they want to make more? Hey, they are a capitalist organization, right? They just want to make more money, right? And the people that are hired there are there to make more money.
You know, there's so many use cases for luxury goods with in relation to NFTs, right? You know, like how they can change the way they are like bought, sold, authenticated, verifying ownership and authenticity as well. But
they're not doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
They're not doing it. It's not like they don't like, yeah, exactly what you say. I think that is the best way, right? Where you have an NFT of your bag so that there's authentication. You can embed some sort of stuff inside. Maybe you can scan, blah, 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 to verify the physical thing. You know, but they're not. They just want to sell cartoons to make more money.
I think that hopefully will change. I mean, like, you know, in the coming kind of like, you know, months or years, because I think this part about, this is a very lazy way to kind of like launch an NFT project. And I think that that's just going to get a more thoughtful after some of the mistakes that, you know, have happened over the past kind of 1 or 2 years. I mean, because I find that when you look at illiquid markets, such as like, you know, I mean, I would call like luxury goods generally illiquid. You know, there are a lot of applications here.
I would call NFT more illiquid at this point in time.
Fair enough.
More illiquid. You buy, let's, oh, chalat, how to sell now? Very chalat.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
but please, I'm just disturbing you. Go for it.
Frankly, I don't have an opinion on this one, like, you know what I mean? Definitely not the target audience. You know, I don't give a shit about LV or Porsche.
By the way, the Porsche NFT was a digital replica of the 911 model being sold at 0.911 ETH. So that's about like, you know, 1,005 US. There were to be about 7,500 NFTs of that. You know, so you can be trading expensive images of the Porsche.
Yeah, I tell you, yeah. Muji, you release NFT on your like plain t-shirt, I'll buy, I support you. Okay, it's like, it's like just like it's so dumb. I cannot. I mean, this whole NFT, this thing, right? I mean, previously I heard someone also talking about like buying digital homes, right? Like the whole thing is set up and then you get, you buy like a developer, they sell you the home. You get a physical one, yes, but you can like pay additional for the digital one. I'm like, I already got a physical one. Eh. Why do I need to pay more for the digital one? I don't get it. I don't understand. Maybe I'm weird, lah, but I don't understand. It's just so weird. And Tim, I agree with you. Like, there's so many better use cases. I don't know why these big boys are not using it in with utility in mind, with improving the customer experience in mind, and solely just going on pursuit to try to like get random artists. Okay, not say random lah, you know, but like, you know, get an artist to draw something and then sell for a premium to what? Make money from their fans again?
Yeah, I don't know. But
yeah, it's supposed to be a lighthearted third story, right? Sorry.
No, but I guess, yeah, overall, you know, the luxury world's involvement of NFTs is still in its early stages. I mean, there is potential for them to disrupt the way they are bought, sold, or valued, but we're just not there yet. Currently, still just wearing virtual fashion items in the metaverse.
Bro, even you don't sound convinced at all.
The way you say it, on metaverse as well.
it's like, guys, let me put it to you this way, okay? If you see me in the metaverse, right, I'll probably be like, you know, wearing like peacock feather with like bikini or something, right? I want to like kind of live a different life in the virtual world, right? Why I want to like
recreate myself? You can do that for our show next week. You don't need to wait for
metaverse. It's fine. We don't need that. Don't need, the real world is different, okay? But we don't need to. Why? What's so fun about creating a you that wears a suit that go to work in a metaverse?
I think that aspect is that I can understand why that would turn some people on, like maybe just being open-minded, like, you know, it could be fun for some people. right? But what I don't understand, right? Like if I was, you know, say the, if I was running like a very highly exclusive luxury brand, right? You know, my brand is usually, it's really built on the fact that not everybody gets to kind of like, you know, be a part of my community and gets to own something like this, right? Launching an NFT project, you know, makes it lose that shine, you know, like that exclusivity. In my opinion, I mean, like, yes, it is true that, you know, like when you launch an NFT project, there are only like, you know, a certain number of NFTs that are, you know, in circulation, emitted, fine, right? But at the same time, like for me, it just kind of cheapens the branding a little bit. So from a corporate, I guess from a branding point of view, like I think it's suitable for some brands, you know, that do actually have a stake in that culture, right? But I don't see... Yeah, like, you know, it's not applicable to every kind of like, you know, like luxury brand out there. Yeah. Yeah. So that's my view, lah, you know.
No, I agree that, you know, this world seems better suited to like Nike, for example.
Yeah, exactly.
Where you
I guess the other interesting story in the NFT space is the Bitcoin NFTs. I mean, like, it's recently been, you know, the Bitcoin community has been really split into two because of the Bitcoin Ordinals project. So like Bitcoin Ordinals, for the benefit of the audience, it's essentially an NFT project where like the NFTs are being minted on Bitcoin.
It's a protocol, not a project.
It's a protocol.
Protocol that allows, you know, basically NFTs to be minted on Bitcoin. Yeah.
And so, you know, I just, the split is very easy to explain. So like, you know, the idea behind Bitcoin, if you speak to someone who is a Bitcoin maxi, right, they're very, very purist. Okay, so it is about owning Bitcoin is essentially a middle finger, showing the middle finger to the Fed and to the central banks and to like, you know, TradFi.
I've met those people.
Yeah, and so it's kind of like Bitcoin or bust. They don't need any other use case aside from the fact that like, you know, it is supposed to kind of like disrupt centralized finance. Right. So the community really, you know, dislikes even the suggestion of use cases beyond this, such as the NFT protocol, like the Ordinals. Yeah. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I mean, like, you know, I think that, like, you know, it's actually quite ironic, right? Because if the community, you know, starts kind of like having really strong views on what can or can't be built on that chain, then who gets to decide that, number one? And number two, aren't we just kind of like, you know, like reverting to a centralized form of governance?
Oh,
isn't finally, that kind of like, you know, like
finally,
right? Sorry,
yes, finally, more right? And more people and then, are awakening to
and
that.
Then okay, I'm gonna get a bit ideological here, lah. Okay,
as right? You always do, lah. It's okay, I approve.
It is a situation where, you know, you have these crazy maxis, right? Where, like, you know, like the idea here is that collective identity is more important than your individual right to do whatever the hell you want to do. Right, so this is kind of essentially almost a left versus right thing, kind of like playing out on like the Bitcoin thing, in my opinion, lah. And you know what happens when it goes to the either end of extremes, lah. You know, on one end there's freaking like, you know, like Nazi Germany, on the other end you have freaking like Mao China, lah, where a lot of people fucking die, lah. You know, so like that is the ideological perspective here, lah. So like, I just don't think that, like, you know, you should actually dictate, right, like what can or can't be built on the chain. And I think that you have to kind of like allow that experimentation to eventually find some sort of middle ground. Yeah.
No.
But that's my view.
You shouldn't have thrown Nazi Germany and Mao into the story, because I'm just gonna throw like the mystery of Aztecs, right? The Aztecs didn't die, or the Mayans didn't die. It's not a mystery. They didn't suddenly disappear, right? The colonial powers went in to wipe them all out, you know. So we don't go there. Once you touch that ground, I think it's an endless debate. I will not let you lose.
Okay, yeah, but you can see it's not that crazy, you know. Like it starts off from with great intentions, right? Like, you know, like, yeah. But then at the same time, if you're being so militant about it, right, then you are essentially becoming the monster already.
Okay, fair. Rounding off, it's supposed to be a fun third story, guys.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It's supposed to be a fun story.
Yes, so like for regular NFTs, right? For regular NFTs, you know, it stores a link that then points to a web page where the image or whatever digital media is being hosted, right? So that is the proof. If the site is pulled down, the asset is gone, by the way. For Bitcoin Ordinal NFTs, you know, the asset is stored directly on the Bitcoin blockchain. You know, be it an MP3 file, an image, or whatever. So, you know, all these things are on the blockchain. It's not just a link that points you somewhere anymore. I mean, people are experimenting, you know, for more use cases. I think that's a good thing. But yeah, apparently maxis think that Bitcoin doesn't actually need a use case. The fact that it's, as Mark said, you know, an alternative medium of store of wealth or whatever, something, an alternative to fiat is enough already. But you know, some people still think that there needs to be more use cases to spur adoption and for it to grow in value. Yeah, I mean, being digital gold is not enough.
Yeah, fair, interesting. Oh, I didn't know that. I thought that was quite interesting to know that the thing is stored on the chain itself. And just for clarity, so if more and more things are stored on the chain, does it mean that it will be more and more expensive and more energy consuming to manage that chain? Okay, fair.
Of course,
if we don't go there. We don't go there. But it's just a question, yeah, because more data is being stored, right? So more data is being processed at one time. Okay, very cool.
Yeah,
very
interesting. Bitcoin isn't the most efficient thing, though. Yeah,
I mean, as of this week, the average Bitcoin transaction fee has been the highest since in the past 3 months, though. Yeah.
Fair. Interesting. Cool. Okay. Third story is supposed to be a fun one. Okay. It's quite fun. I think we try to make it fun. So yeah. But next week is gonna be the interesting one, though. Shall we let the cat out of the bag? What's gonna happen next week?
Okay. So next week we have our first guest on the show, and it's a pretty big name. We're going to have Annabelle Huang, who's a partner at Amber Group.
Yep. And I mean, Amber Group is, you know, essentially a digital asset provider. So they do, you know, like they provide trading products, infrastructure. The most important thing, I guess, or rather the most relevant thing, I think, that for the audience to know is that they are Temasek backed.
why is it the most relevant thing?
I think that is actually like a conversation for another time.
Next week, that's the real conversation next week.
Yeah. So Temasek is an investor. Yeah. So, you know, they basically work with companies ranging from token issuers, banks, you know, fintech firms, etc. Right. So generally, like, you know, like a, would you call them a service provider in this sense?
They completed their Series C fundraising round about a month ago, and that brought in about $300 million.
Nice. And was Temasek on the table? Probably, right?
I didn't actually read the release.
We can find out next week. So stay tuned next week as we double down on some of these interesting juices along the lines of budget, right? So budget 2023 is coming out next week. So getting a very big company that is backed by Temasek, I think we have a lot of questions to ask, you know, about how state fund is managed, you know, but also, you know, what is their optics of the future, okay?
Sounds good. Yeah.
Okay, nice. We'll see all of you next week. Take care. Ciao. All. Bye.
Thanks, guys. See you later. Bye.
Hey, Coconuts. So yes, I hope you enjoy this new show that we're building together with the team at Blockhead. And the goal is very clear, right? We're not here to shill any token or be a cheerleader for any project, but we feel that there's a lot of development that's going on in this space that we could cover and continue to be a little bit smarter as investors. I mean, eventually you tune in every week to a financial podcast network so that you can be smarter with your investments. And if so happen, this is something that you're looking at, the crypto space, Web3, Metaverse, all these kind of stuff, then that is where we're trying to cover, but not from the angle of like this is good, that is bad, but really trying to see it from like what is happening, how is it developing. And I hope you find this useful and interesting, right? So if you want to continue to get more coverage around the crypto space, check out blockhead.co, and then we will see you next week.